Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Amber, episode 4 of the podcast. My, have we got a grand show for you tonight, and I'm sorry, you will have probably, if you're listening to this on iTunes, heard the last bit of that intro, and I have to say that is the most fantastic intro we have ever heard. I could not bear to listen to the full song. Oh. Apologies. Well, there we go. Anyway, a lot has happened in this past week, as always, and we hope to cover it all, as well as raise and discuss some interesting points, as we always do. So allow me to introduce the panel tonight. Joining me, first off, is my usual broadcast colleague, CNW commentator, and glutton extraordinaire, Mr. Matt the Doctor. Say hello.
Hello. I just imbibed an entire box of caramel creams that I got my brother to buy me, so that proves that. Also, I just want to say in that intro, I can't be the only one who heard the line, "I see that girl standing in the corner of the kitchen."
In her rightful place. We're going to get pulled off the air for sexism. Although we'll probably get pulled off the air for something here tonight, and probably judging through to our second guest of the evening. This is the man who's the mastermind behind SEPW, as well as the man who's the mastermind behind Golden Triad. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to Osaka Destroyer.
Hello.
Hi. Hello, OD. Making his debut in the Radio Armbar Zone. Okay, first off, yes, tonight, we're going to take a look at the past week of AAS, and first off, we had Casino Knights Wrestling on Wednesday. Had two huge debuts, and the announcement that next week Trent Kakoa, Sego Khan, and Miles King will be in the main event to determine the number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship. Now, CNW this week, it was probably, in a strange way, the least amount of effort that I'd put into a show in terms of time. I think it was just because I pretty much have got everything down to a formula now, and I have a lot of shortcuts that I know I can take. I've learned Vegas inside and out at this point, and I could probably edit a show together in my sleep. So I think for this week of CNW, it was really, really easy to do, and as well as the rendering time being a lot less, now I know what settings to use, etc., etc. So it was pretty good. I don't know what you guys thought of it. I think we really finally got to the point in commentary where I felt we were pretty good, so I was pretty happy with it. So, gentlemen, your thoughts on CNW, if you will, first off to my broadcast colleague, Mr. Matt.
Wow, I had a lot of fun with CNW. I mean, I also feel that we really hit our stride in a lot of places on commentary. Obviously, on a personal note.
Yeah, high five.
Yeah, high five.
Yeah.
On a personal note, Cobra T's return, I'm just so happy that was... just everyone really seemed to enjoy it. I'm sure you could hear in my voice just how happy I was. It was just awesome. It was great to just finally kind of feel the passion for the character again, and to bring him back and have him come back in such a way. And I was seriously getting physically sick before the show.
Yeah.
not to the point of vomiting or anything, but I was just freaking out for that, like, you have no idea. I was like, oh god, oh god, oh god, oh god.
Yeah, I can attest for that. I was sat here with Matt, and I had to console him. He was breaking into tears.
Yes, I was flooding my entire apartment. I would have gotten sued for water damage.
Again.
No, that was the people upstairs who poured water through my ceiling. but yeah, that was really cool. And matches were all really great. Hiro Nagasaki, I want to touch on. Like, I did not expect... Like, I've seen the call. Mm. Right? I've seen pictures of the call. I saw him in debut at Pachinko Paradise. But it wasn't until his actual match that I realized just how freaking gigantic he is.
Yeah, he's pretty big. Oh, he's one of those big, very dark Japanese people.
Oh, great, though, because it was just big, and just the call looks fantastic. I love kind of the guy's attitude. It's so cool. Just really, really cool. I think he's going to be a big name in CNW. Just, I think, and he's destined to go places, if you ask me. Of course, Tyler Raikou.
I don't know the Japanese word for destiny, but I would insert it here.
Destino.
No, that's Spanish.
I know. Hiro del Rio.
He kind of looks Spanish.
He doesn't really look Japanese.
Yeah, he does kind of look Spanish. Looks great, though. I love the call.
Yeah, he looks great. Just Japanese isn't the first thing I think of when I see the call, but he still looks really good.
Yeah, I can agree, I will say. I do agree. Mm-hmm. Man, Tyler Eichron's debut was another really great moment. Just, it's really cool seeing him. I really liked that.
Tyler Eichron's debut was the one that I was really just kind of looking forward to, as well as just kind of... Well, it was the double swerve in a way, because even Tiffy didn't know what was going to happen. He had an idea of when he was going to debut, and obviously we had the first match set up to be the red herring with Cobra T's debut, as well as the other rumored debuts that are happening or may have happened already. So there was, of course, there's the mystery opponent that we put there on purpose just to kind of have the red herring, as well as other things. So it was great having Tyler Eichron there. Like you say, it's great to have him back in W13 and to have him in CNW.
Mm. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what you have in store for him.
Big wheel, fairly dick. That's all I'll say.
Yep.
Okay, so now, Mr. Second Destroyer, what do you think about Casino Nitro?
Oh, shit.
I was waiting for this one.
Really, I just think you guys have really hit your stride. Like, if anything, you guys have cemented yourself as, like, the top fed.
Thanks.
Because with all of the, with, like, with, like, Tyler Eichron and all of these big-name guys coming in, mm-hmm. like, it's the top fed now.
Right.
Just with the commentary and everything.
Yeah, I mean, that was a thing when I had Casino Nights Wrestling set out originally. It was intended to be kind of, I suppose, the side fed to WFL. And then, obviously, WFL being on hiatus... indefinitely,
yep.
I kind of figured, well, we should go for this top spot because I believe we can be the top spot for some time. I was like, I don't feel we're the top spot, but once these guys debut, we'll have it.
So yeah, like with Cobra T, like I was kind of suspecting that he would be in CNW from the moment that his match with Super Blizzard, mm-hmm. you know, when he had to leave Waffle.
Right.
So that was a good thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, we made the joke that all of Matt's characters apart from Cobra T. Washington appeared until Cobra T. Washington did.
Yeah. That's the real reason there were so many cameos.
Yeah, yeah, like, apart from Action Jackson, pretty much all of your characters appeared.
It's because he's exclusive.
The exclusive Action Jackson. So yeah, I'm really glad to hear that, though. Thank you, OD. Any other thoughts? Or are we going to move on?
Nope. Sorry.
Are we good? Okay.
Okay.
No, we've just got you on the show for your funny reactions as well as your amazing laugh. That is why we have you here.
Yep.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, sirs. Next up on our schedule on Friday, we had the lovely show known as T-Fire. Two new sets of champions were crowned, as well as the huge debut of the stable that's been hounding Richie Steven for months, I would say. Made up of Father Jason, Caitlin Myers, and Mr. Bearded Dragon after Richie Stevens retained his world championship in that huge main event against Derek Bryson. That stable made their debut, went down there, and delivered a huge beatdown, really. Now, gentlemen's T-Fire, your thoughts, and first off, this time to OD. What's your thoughts on T-Fire?
Well, first off, no bow, so it was shit. No, really, I haven't really followed T-Fi a whole lot,
mm-hmm.
but from what I saw from the stable, it's interesting. You know, I hope Beardy kind of goes a different route with it, like maybe do something different
Right.
Because the whole spooky stable has kind of been done before, but... But maybe if he goes a different... Maybe if he goes a different route with it.
Right.
Yeah, I can completely agree with you. I mean, that was my initial reaction to it, was just kind of... Especially with all the pre-hype debuts, vignettes even to their debut, yeah. I was kind of like, it's another spooky stable, but hopefully... From what I've heard, it might be more than that, so... So
I really like, you know, all the individual characters in it, personally. Like, I love Father Jason. It's really cool to see him back in some form, or see him around, you know, I mean, because we saw it was on the Twitter, because pretty much just Father Jason's been hyped up on Twitter through the Testify AES account.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really like that character type. Just kind of the, you know, the dark preacher. That's just probably one of my favorite archetypes. Just straight up. Just because I think there's so much that can be done with it. So I think it's really cool to see him around.
Yeah.
I do agree on the kind of the different thing. Because, I mean, if it's a spooky stable, I don't just want it to be a spooky stable. I want it to do something and also, you know, maybe have a twist. And again, from what I hear, I think that the twist is pretty cool. So.
Hopefully they'll all tie together.
Yeah, I think so.
It's pretty great. So, you know, on my own thoughts on T-Fire, I think, honestly, I have to kind of, like, again, agree with ODU, just kind of the thing of, like, T-Fire has been kind of hard to follow, and I think, like I said, in the criticism thread or feedback thread or whatever you want to call it, I feel like it kind of fell into a little bit of a formula, and a lot of matches would get repeated, but I think... If the last show's anything to judge by, I think it's starting to get back on track again, starting to be the good show that it once was and can be.
Yeah, I can see. I think T-Fire. I think that really the title changes and stuff were all really cool too.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, just really a lot happened this week. Seth winning the Firestarter Championship is a really cool moment. I actually really like Def Jarrett. Just I think that his rap promos are really funny, but just Seth is really cool.
Yeah, Seth's really cool because he's the ultimate underdog. You know, he's the one that everyone kind of cheers for. He is the Mikey Whipwreck kind of deal that everyone can kind of feel apologetic for. At the same time, you know, you want him to win. We want him to go for the big push. So it's really good to get him to have that big field dog moment. I was reading the chat at the same time and I saw underdog, a field dog moment.
Yes,
that field dog.
That field.
I know that field dog.
Feels.
So deep.
That and also Gurley debuting was really cool. It was pretty much Dr. Midcard and Gurley, so it's kind of a rehash of Pink and Power with a twist versus the Rikrans.
The Rikrans.
The Rikarans.
The whole Tiger family.
The entire Tiger family.
Yeah, so T-Fire, like I say, I think for a couple of last episodes after WrestleMania, it seemed to be in a bit of a lull, but I think right now it's starting to hit stride again, and I really am looking forward to the continuation of the storylines and just the fact that a lot of things have changed, which I felt needed to be changed or needed to be kind of mixed up a little bit.
Yeah. So
it's been freshened up a bit. They've put a little zest of lemon into the T-Fire cocktail, and I can appreciate it.
Yes, food references.
Yes, food references.
Yes. This is something we can all agree on.
Yes.
Yes.
OD being a chef and me and Matt being fat.
We're a perfect trio.
Yes. We're not fat, we're just hungry.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. And speaking of... Oh, God, I can use this segue. Speaking of eating, onto the real meat of the show.
Uh-oh. Hey-o.
Heyo!
Heyo!
I have this on the script! I legit have this on the script! Oh my god, I had food on the mind. This week was the final in the Golden Triad Tournament Trilogy, with the tournament ending with Class Inc. versus Team Rose and Team Rose walking out with that victory after the huge match, as well as many other matches. The show up and down was one for the ages. And of course, with one of our guests here tonight at the helm. Man, I really, really did enjoy Golden Triad. OD did a fantastic work with all the cars, all the editing, everything you did. Thank you, sir. You do a great service for the website. You do a great service for all of your fans.
Yes. So. Well, yeah.
Oh, you too.
not thank you, just yeah.
Yeah,
no, really. Like, originally, I was really unsure about it. Like, I wasn't sure how a whole tournament just requiring one match type would work out.
Right.
So I was unsure about it at first, but I'm really glad I went with it because it really turned out really good.
It did.
Maybe if I do it next year, I might do it a little different. Just maybe just keep it with the tournament instead of the sub matches. Not that the sub matches weren't fantastic.
Yeah.
But else, yeah, we'll see.
Okay, so first off, though, I'd like to go on, if we kind of generalize this a little, and they do the overall show thoughts. First off, then, to Matt.
Oh my god, what a show. Really, I think Night 3 especially will just be kind of held up there with probably some of the best AES shows of all time. Mm. And I truly mean that. Just from a match quality perspective, from a call perspective, from editing, from all the segments to the moments, I just think it will really just be one that'll just be remembered forever, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, people always talk about, I don't know, not to blow my own horn, you know, the Super Show from last year, and then Golden Triad, you know, a bunch of other shows, maybe like Odyssey. Things like
Odyssey,
that.
Progress.
All In.
Yeah, All In.
Kingdom Come.
Yeah, I was thinking.
You know, Kingdom Come. People will just look at those kind of tiers of shows, and, you know, Golden Triad, Night 3 will be right at the top. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, so much happened. So much happened. Like, just, you know, Team CNW versus IVW is great. God, I love that Dr. Steel call, just both in appearance and in logic. You did such a good job, OD.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just really with everything. It was just such a good event. And obviously the Triple X Championship match. I had a plate of food, of course. It was dinner time. They cut me some slack. And I had a plate of food, this thing, and I was just watching the match and just eating it really slowly because I was just, my heart could not take it. My stomach was just kind of doing backflips. I was like, holy shit, this is so tense.
Obviously, on a personal level, I really, really did enjoy that match just because it was really tense and it was just a great match. And I was at my sister's and I was on her laptop. And as I mentioned before on Twitter, my sister has a very big and very annoying dog. So I was.
Yeah, I saw you talking about that in the chat.
He's a pest! Yeah, I was trying to concentrate on the match, and he wanted to go out really badly, and I was like, ugh. So I let him out, and I sat there, and I watched the match, like, all the way through, and I was like, man, that was a great match. Why is it cold in here? And then I remembered, like, the door was still open, and the dog was still outside, and he opened the door, and he was just sat there looking at me. It was kind of like, where the fuck were you? I was watching fake wrestling, come on!
Just gotta just... Why, Dan? Why?
I waited for you, Dan.
Aww.
Yeah, sad moment. But yeah, it was really good. Anything else, Matt?
Yeah. Of course, two really huge moments that I could probably gush about. Well, first, Roger Hellman was, you know, Osaka Destroyer versus the returning former Redneck Ninja. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. Just I had a feeling, you know, I hear rumors and things, and I was like, oh man, if this is who I think it is, I'm just gonna flip out, and it was, and I flipped out. Just I really liked Redneck Ninja. Like, I thought that it was just a really kind of simple, fun gimmick, and I like to see that he's still pretty much the same, just kind of, you know, new look, which I love. You know, he looks like people were comparing like redneck Chuck Norris or Stryker from Mortal Kombat, and I'm like, yeah, that's a really cool look. Just in terms of look, you know, like, yeah, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I love the move set, and you know, he's still the same kind of redneck ninja he always was, but you know, a little different. Not like that.
He's found his true self, and he got a blue camouflage shirt.
I went on a journey to find myself, and all I got was this blue shirt.
Hey, Hellman, you're making your big debut. You're going to find some ring gear? Nah, it's cool. I got this thrift shop thing.
Walk up in the ring, like, what up? I got a blue shirt.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, it was great. It was great. And I liked especially the kind of the confusion. Like, people weren't sure if it was, you know, really him or, you know, what it was. And then later in the night, that was clarified.
Yeah.
And that was just, yeah, it was just such a good moment. And my other favorite moment, Ryan Davis's heel turn. It was a long time. Just, oh my God. Wow. Like, that scene, I couldn't believe how serious it was, really. Like, honestly, OD, I mean, you're amazing at, you know, writing, really. You are just, you know, scripting your scenes, but at how, yeah. God, just everything about it was just paced perfectly. okay, there. It had a funny moment. Just thank you. But then when the car hit her and just, God, just the, I know the music changing was a little funny, but like, just how everyone was turning on Ryan, both in the chat and on the show, and just how well it came across. He just like immediately became like public enemy number one. Mm-hmm. And yes. From a guy who I think really needed kind of a reboot, this did it, to just something that, oh wow, I see huge things. I think this really just gave him that kind of fire that he really needed, and especially with, you know, a great way to write out, you know, such a huge face as Crisis, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just perfectly done, really. So those were...
Yeah, when I was writing it, like, I needed a way to write out Crisis. So I was thinking, and Epicure X came to me, and he asked me about, you know, oh, I'm going to go with the Ryan Davis heel turn. So I was like, okay, I'll just have her beat up Crisis. And then, but that segment in particular was very hard to put together, because 13 with the whole diva thing where you can't beat him up, that was really hard to do.
yeah
like you couldn't even put her in the car crash scene.
No,
could you?
So wow. I had to get creative with just, that's why I incorporated the whole Team Atlas thing into it, because I couldn't really actually physically sure getting hit by the car.
Right, yeah. And that works anyway, just because of Richie Stevens' relationship with Ryan Davis.
Yeah,
That was awesome, just how they were just right there backstage to see it all happen. Like, wow, that was just something I could legit see in like a film, or, you know, obviously a real wrestling show. Just, wow, you know. It was just masterfully done. Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of not fairy tale, but I suppose just the old adage of the dog getting run over is pretty funny as well.
It's kind of sad.
It's ironic.
Yeah, I suppose it's that weird kind of irony.
SAPW is going to win a Pulitzer Prize because the dog died.
Yeah.
Seriously. Or no, a Newbery medal. Seriously, find any children's book with a dog on the cover and a Newbery medal, and you already know how it ends.
That's pretty funny, actually, and I know for a fact it's true. Okay, OD, your overall thoughts on Golden Triad, your favorite match to do, or any funny production stories or anything of that ilk?
Probably my favorite match that came out really well was the, you know, obviously the Rose match. Just the way that I record matches. You know, I don't play as the character. I usually let this computer do it. So it's kind of nerve-wracking because, you know, with Laser leaving, I couldn't let Deborah Eckhart win. So that just made everything more intense when I was recording, because I was watching. I was like, please don't win. Please don't win. Please don't win.
Yeah, I've been in that position. I know what it is.
As have I.
During the Super Show.
Go on.
Yeah, and just the main event that came out, that was probably one of my more favorite matches.
Anything else? Maybe anything funny that happened in production, because I know you seem to get every game possible to glitch on you.
God, I can't think now.
I'm pretty sure you could get MS Paint to glitch if you tried.
Yeah.
Drawing and suddenly just every single icon starts stretching like in WW 13.
I've got it written on the sheet. OD goes ham. He is not going ham.
You really have OD goes ham?
Yeah, that's what I wrote on the sheet.
Mother of God.
You don't see it. So, yeah, anyway, I guess overall, I mean, we pretty much went over everything that we wanted to kind of mention with Golden Triad. I've pretty much have gushed about it enough as is.
Well, there's something I'm kind of curious about, OD. Just how long, I mean, obviously don't spoil much if you can help it, but how long has, you know, RNN coming to SABW kind of been planned out?
I think immediately after the second show was made, I think Sean came to me and messaged me in PM. It's like, hey, maybe we actually not before. Like, he's been wanting to introduce Hellman into SABW for a while, but then after the second show, he messaged me. It's like, hey, how about we work something out and make his debut on night 3? I was like, okay.
Oh wow, cool. So that's pretty cool, though, you know, kind of simple, and it worked out, and it's a pretty big moment.
I think it's one of those that we just kind of thought about a bit simply, I suppose, in a way, when you kind of, you know, you can think about, like, for example, in comparison, Tyler Rykren, where it was this thing that if you didn't watch the show, then you would have completely missed out. There was, like, no kind of idea that in the main event Tyler Rykren would have debuted. It wasn't a mystery opponent, it wasn't a mystery tag team partner or anything like that, so unless you watched it, then you wouldn't have known. But, you know, in comparison, this being something that people were excited for, it's just kind of, it's simple, but it worked really well.
And I think the general kind of consensus is everyone's pretty happy RNN's back in some capacity.
I'm interested to see his new visage and his new
persona.
Yeah, RNN's going to shoot break himself up in the head with a gun, and the sticks and gravy's going to come out.
He's gonna shoot himself in the head, and his persona is just like a giant beer bottle with boxing gloves or something.
A beer bottle with boxing gloves in it. No, I could just see, like, a beer bottle with a ninja mask and a kendo stick.
Hellman's persona is RNN.
Yeah, pretty much. That needs to go into the final form thread, which I just remembered exists. Speaking of final forms, Derry's just posted his final form in the chat. It is a giant gorilla.
Rip.
Okay, that's pretty good, actually. I feel this is the most chill podcast that we've done in some time. Like, like even when we had Girly on, I did not feel this high.
Not even the contact high?
No, it's just the influence of OD. You're just so chill about it, dude.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just, like, nervousing up really bad. I don't even know why.
No, seriously.
It's cool, man. It's cool.
Yeah.
We're all pals here.
My entire room is spaghetti right now.
You gotta fight spaghetti. Man,
I'm trying.
do what Side-Eye does, and when he spills spaghetti, pick it up, put it back in, and save it for dinner.
I suddenly look down and I'm wearing a GameStop uniform.
It's my worst nightmare.
I think this is just evolving into giggles.
I had so much I wanted to talk about, and I can't think about it now.
Aww.
Oh, we'll come back to it. We can always have you on a second time.
Yeah.
Actually, this would be a good point. If you do feel like you'd like to be on the show at any time, let us know. Just PM me or Matt, or just tweet at us or anything, and we can probably think up of an idea. The last few ones we've just done because of timing and everything else, like with having TBK and Girly, and that was just because of, you know, the timing Showtime. With ProRes and with OD, obviously, Golden Triad was last night, and with those are the only guests that we've had. So I think, you know, we've talked in the future about certain guests that we would like to have, and I do think that some of the combinations we have in mind would be rather great. So,
yep.
But if you're really, really eager, we'll consider it. Mm-hmm. If you think you've got a really good idea.
Come on again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we'd love to have you on again.
Yeah.
Always.
You always come on our content.
Since I'm spaghettiing it up right now.
Look, man, if you think of anything you want to talk about, just interrupt us.
Yeah, it's not like we ever say anything important anyway.
Shitty fake show stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of shitty fake show stuff, the wildcard subject we'd like to talk about for this week is the actual integration of Twitter into shitty fake show stuff on the ether. Now, I know like Twitter's something that pretty much all of us have gotten into. I'd say probably 95% of people in AES have used Twitter in their characters to some degree. So, and you know, I can see from a personal experience, oh god, it's just, I'm too chilled. From a personal experience, it can add a lot to characters, and as a whole, you know, it does add that whole other level to EFED in the social networking, the interactions, and the kind of shorter promo kind of dealies, I guess.
Yeah.
If you want to call it that, I suppose it's just a kind of promotion. That's what I mean by promo more than actual RPs or whatever. So, Mental Gen, I would like to talk about your opinions on Twitter integration, examples of where it's used well, what it can and cannot do, and, you know, the comparisons with ye olde traditional promo, ye olde RP, the things that have been done since eFeds were invented in 1988 by Abraham Lincoln.
Man, John Hamilton versus George Washington, match of the year, man.
I mean, Alamo.
Excellent. So, okay then. First off, to OD, what are your thoughts on Twitter, sir?
Well, at first, I think it can be done really well. I mean, first off, it's the worst thing about Twitter is it's very easy to do.
Right.
So, I mean, you just write out a whole message and that's your point, and then send. But with, it's also good for maybe building characters. Because when, unlike, say, a show for SABW, I have to write for someone, I just go to their Twitter and I kind of get a grasp for that character.
Yeah.
And that's, in that way, that's, it's good.
I would like to also mention, by the way, that a lot of the hilarious ideas that incorporated with Claude Reyes, OD came up with, and I will not take the credit for. The sex lord thing was completely him. So. And that kind of spawned a life on its own. But yes, continue anyway.
Yeah, but
You were just saying, like, it just helps people writing and developing characters.
Yeah, it helps developing the characters first, but in my opinion, they should just do more promos, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe just don't keep it entirely on Twitter. like document it with maybe a promo or something, because Twitter is it's easy to lose stuff on Twitter. Like, once you post a message, it just gets bogged down by everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah. I completely agree, and I mean, a lot of that has been in the past where there's a lot of stuff that's happened on Twitter, and people who haven't been able to follow it, like I wasn't able to follow Twitter yesterday because I was being constantly attacked by a giant dog, and I couldn't get my phone out of my pocket because said giant dog kept attacking my phone, and also me, and the laptop, and everything else. So, yeah. So, you know, just as an example, I wasn't able to follow Twitter yesterday, so if, you know, if a big development happened on Twitter and then it was reflected on the show, I'd be like, wait, what? But a good example of where it has been incorporated into a promo would be, for example, in Joe Vader's, I'm not sure if his most recent, I think it was his most recent promo in CNW, where he spoke to Yuka and they had a meetup. And he posted a little Twitter log where he showed the interactions between the two of them on Twitter as a screenshot. And that was a really good way of doing it, since it did have that kind of out of character, out of promo development on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And they also called back to it in the promo. So that was a good way of doing it. You know, it sets up the promo via Twitter. Or in the opposite kind of way, you can develop off of a promo, you know, where we can say it in a number of promos. So, you know, again, using CNW as an example, because I just, you know, I keep an eye on it, since my own thing. With the Free Woman Band, so they could, you know, finish the promo by saying they were going to watch Boku no Pico, and then for the next 20 minutes they could all tweet about how it the most emotionally wrecking show they have ever watched.
Yeah, that was great.
Well, for the first 20 minutes until they got into the actual...
hey, this show doesn't look so...
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh.
Until they got onto the boy-on-boy action.
Mixed martial arts?
Yes. Man-on-man action. MMA. So, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and, you know, really good points, OD. So, I left Matt until last on this one, because I know he has some very strong opinions, and as soon as we were discussing before the show what points we could use as a wild card, and OD... I think I have a big list of points that I save, and I just kind of ran through, and I said Twitter, and then OD was like, oh yeah, Twitter would be really good, and then I kind of, like, my heart dropped, because I knew Matt would have very strong opinions in this, and I can't wait.
Oh.
No, because I can't agree with you in a lot of ways. I already know what you're going to say, but I want you to say it anyway for the masses. I want you to preach, so go ahead.
Well, I agree in that Twitter...
Okay, we're done, guys.
Okay, fuck off. Yep, well, we just lost our PG rating.
We never had a PG rating.
Anyway.
Go on.
I think Twitter is very, very useful for developing a character and just having a little fun with a character. Like, you can use it to make kind of fun jabs, or just, you know, be a little silly, be a little fun, or be serious, you know, like... I have, you know, a few Twitters here and there. I use Aaron as pretty much my main kind of character to interact with people because he's fun. Mm. But then I have Cobra T that I mostly use to just kind of set up his promos. You know, sometimes I interact with a few of the other characters. Sometimes I just kind of tweet a few song lyrics to sound deep.
Too and, edgy. You know, that's
too edgy teenager. And, you know, then I have others that I use for different purposes. You know, I have Matt Soup mostly just to kind of be a joke and to annoy Jason East.
To tweet Jason East pictures of gorillas.
Yeah, tweet Jason East pictures of gorillas that progressively get bigger. Just one day he's just going to pick one and his phone is going to explode.
Oh, speaking of things, should I mention the thing about Bud Light?
Hmm. Which thing? Oh! No, they can figure it out themselves.
No, I want to, because I want people... No one's noticed. I made a joke the other week that no one pays attention to the weights in wrestling, and it proves my point. Bud Light started off as being combined billed as 200 pounds. Last show, they were combined billed as 677 pounds. No one noticed. Go back and watch it. It's like $600.
It was all made,
pounds.
By the way.
Yeah.
The only reason they started increasing was because I have this stat sheet with a bunch of stats when I'm announcing and commentating, and I literally added their weights together, and I was like, man, this is more than their weight last week. And then I just got lazy, and I just kept making it bigger and bigger and bigger.
No, because when I did it first, when I fully wrote up the sheet the first time I give it to you, and I couldn't be bothered making up Bud Light's weight. Like, I couldn't be bothered opening up calculator, so I was just like, 250 pounds. I have no idea what American weights are, so for me, 250 pounds sounds like a lot.
So just have it be completely random on each episode.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we've been
doing.
Just
go to a random number generator, say four digits, and just... and a combined weight of 9,999 pounds. Cole Scorpio, Dirk Derrick, Bud Light.
Yeah, pretty much. So it started off with that, and then it ended up being lighter, and then I was kind of like, I said to Matt, it'd be funny if we made him heavier every show to see if someone noticed. And no one did until that point out, so I figured we'd point it out now whilst we're on the subject, because I thought...
But anyway, Twitters.
Yes, go on.
I think that it's very useful for small things. Mm. You know, things of no consequence. However, I think people really, 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 really need to write more promos. Mm. Just pretty much everything you do, reflect it in a promo. Do not do entire storylines that affect nothing, like huge storyline things. You know, everything, at the end of the day, everything we work towards should be reflected on screen or in character. You know, I consider text promos to be on screen. Like, in my mind,
yes,
the promos that we write are like WWE.com exclusives, pretty much.
Well, yeah. You always did the thing where, like, talk about the comparison you always make with Chikara.
Okay, you look at Chikara, and you know how they write, you know, huge blog posts? Like, I consider Chikara to pretty much be run like an e-fed, but in real life. They write blog posts that push stories that are reflected on the next show. Like, you'll have Tim Donst, you know, writing a blog post about his line stuff, or being Tim Donst. Hey, guys, I'm Tim Donst. Good luck out there. You know, I have a stupid haircut. You know, whatever. And this is pretty much how I feel, in that, you know, they do it right. You know, they use social media, but they don't use Twitter. Like, they use Twitter to shill the blog post, for example. And I think that's a really cool thing. I think that Twitter should be used to build up towards promos, or build, you know, from promos. Like, you know,
like I said before, it's also a good way to get a grasp of a character. Like, if you made a new character, it's a good way to build them up. Like,
agreed.
To figure out where you're going to go with him.
Agreed. I mean, I've done that. I know TBK did that with Father Jason.
Yeah.
You know, that's the real reason he made the Twitter, was to, you know, kind of get a handle on his voice.
Yeah, and that's what I do to Oishinigami's over Return as Miss Akira.
Mm.
Like, I knew what her voice was going to be. The weird thing that I do with Oishinigami, and I said this to Matt as well, is I know how she would speak in Japanese, but I'm not 100% on how she would speak in English, so I do a literal translation. That's why, you know. Like, the way I would imagine, like, I kind of, like, sound like a weeboo whilst I do this, but it's just pretty much the only way I can put it across, is, you know, you'll know the meme of, like, someone saying desu, you know, you know, it's a very polite way to end the sentence, so I imagine Oi having the tick of always ending the sentence with desuka. Which, if you...
Where Erin just deses a lot.
Yeah, she just does desu a lot. You know, it's just kind of one of those things I was thinking about when I was writing the character's promo, and I was like, that'd be kind of funny if she did that, and then I thought, how would I translate that to English? And at the time, I was reading Danganronpa, and there is a character that does something kind of similar to that, and I figured, like, I was like, why does he do that? And I was reading the translation note, and I was like, oh, the reason why he does that is because he has a tick in Japanese, and... I was like, oh, it'd be funny if she did that, because it's kind of cute, it's kind of, you know, it's just different. And I only picked that up from doing Twitter interactions. That's why she always finishes a lot of her sentences with, like, comma, yeah, or comma, right, because that's just what she would do in Japanese, and it's that literal translation. So, you know, with your point, yeah, it's a good way to kind of establish a character's voice. It's a good way to establish a character's interactions and just get to know them before you kind of get knee deep and actually start doing promos.
But I think, yeah, oh yeah, definitely. But
it's not a substitute for actual promos, though.
Yeah, no. I want people to realize that it's not a substitute because I love promos, man. I love reading what people have to say. Like, they're just so cool. And really, you know, Twitter's fun, but there's nothing quite like just a really well-done promo with, you know, actions and scenarios and voices and just, you know, real interactions, just really deep. And, like, that, you know, is probably my favorite part of, like, really, if I can go on a small tangent here, I think AES has the absolute best e-fetting experience, period, because a lot of my problems...
Yeah, well done, guys. Woo!
Yeah, good job, guys. We've done something good. But I say that because a lot of my problems with strictly text e-feds is that I love reading the promos, but the actual shows aren't very exciting. Mm. Whereas this, we have, you know, awesome promos and awesome shows. You know,
right.
It's kind of a difference. But anyway, yeah. Just most things in, like I said, Twitter should never be a substitute for actual promos. If you have a storyline, even if it's not strictly on screen, there's nothing wrong with storylines that are incorporated into character development. Like, I think that can be huge. Probably one of my favorite things about WCW is that people aren't really afraid to kind of... In a promo, you don't just have to talk about the match. You know, it doesn't have to strictly be the match. Like, a lot of the stuff in the miscellaneous promos board is a lot of character development. You can easily work that into... you know, your in-thread promos, if you wanted, you know? That's how I feel.
Yeah, I mean, you can always kind of tangentially relate them anyway. I mean, to use my own promo as an example, the bit with Aaron and Shell, where this storyline has been planned out for quite some time, and I've got this timeline of what the promos is going to be in my head, and when I wrote it, I was like, okay, I want this to happen. Oh, but how are we going to relate it to our match? Oh, we can relate it to our match this way. And we'll also write the character development.
Right, right. And, I mean, I'll use Cobra and Hyper as an example, because I wrote Cobra back in the day very similar to how I write anything I write for WZCW, in that there was always just a bit between him and Hyper. It was usually a conversation. You know, when Amber got involved, there was, you know, they usually would talk about that, they talk about that. And it would always tie to the match, because it would be like, you know, oh god, what's on Cobra's mind before this match? You know, stuff like that. Smushy smush smoosh.
So, Hyper, how was your pushy smushing? It was okay,
I guess, because I'm suddenly Canadian.
Yeah, I don't know why the Canadian.
Well, because she's Princess Peach.
Yes, she's Canadian Princess Peach.
Hyper isn't even Canadian. She's from Boston by way of Seattle.
Yeah, I bet. Say, I thought she was from Washington.
Or, no, Seattle by way of Boston. Like, right. I'm sure she has a tinge of a Boston accent.
Yeah, is Hyper related to Rudy's mom at all?
Yes.
Just imagine Hyper Blizzard and Rudy's mom having a conversation.
But that's...
And Herschel's mom.
Yeah, Herschel's mom. Now, Hoish, you go out there and you spin the dreidel. But yeah, that's all I'm really saying, is that I think that there really needs to be more connectivity. Like I say, Twitter's great for small, kind of fun things, you know? Not everything you do on Twitter has to be reflected in promos, but there needs to be that kind of continuity between Twitter and promos. And like I say, not everyone has Twitter. Not everyone follows Twitter every single day, 24 hours a day.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, I do try and check my backlog, but sometimes I just can't, you know? I'll be busy for a day and I'll miss, you know, 500, 600 messages. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, I don't really feel like reading and I shouldn't have to. You know, I think that everyone should be able to just read your promos and be like, okay, I understand your character, or I understand the storyline going on. Like, you know,
Another thing with promos, though, on the you know, on the board, I really like what Tiffy was doing, where he was basically doing a weekly thing where he posted all of the promos made in that week. Like, that would be, that's much more easier to follow. Because a lot of times, like, someone makes a promo and then they'll post it, but, you know, you won't be around and then you'll miss it. And you won't even know that promo is there.
Yeah. I think that that would be something really good for someone to do. Like, you don't even have to sum up the entire week. Just say, here are the promos that were posted this week.
And just considering this is like an audio version of what that was.
Right.
That's where I got the idea of it. Considering I was like, you know, this week in AS, but a podcast. I'm basically going to steal Tiffy's idea. I'm going to make it worse. And there we go.
Yeah. Ha. But yeah, that's pretty much how I feel. I feel that there needs to be connectivity between Twitter and promos, and more people should promo because, like I say, I love your guys' work. I really do. I love reading everyone's promos. It's so cool to just see lengthy character development in one promo. Mm-hmm. You know? And while it is fun to do kind of on-the-fly character interactions as someone who's dabbled in a lot of improv,
actually,
like, it's fun.
That's a good point. Do you want to just have a quick bit now, considering we've got a bit of time where we talk about some of our favorite promos recently?
Sure.
Okay. Are you willing to do that, Udi?
No, we can tell us. Come on.
I really haven't read much promos recently.
Yeah.
As of late.
Okay, how about your favorite promos in the past?
Just because I've been working on GTD.
Yeah.
Right. Makes sense.
Okay, then. How about... I don't know, because I feel like we would kind of get into the vein of repeating ourselves. So, okay. I'd say we could save that one maybe for next week.
That'd be a really cool one to do next week.
We're hyping the next show. We're like a legitimate wrestling show.
We're TNA.
Oh.
Hey guys, thanks for buying it. Watch as we talk about something on the next show.
Yeah, we're going to build a pottery show.
We're going to talk about something completely different. Just next week, we just start rattling all around with cake recipes. Promos, what are those? Yeah, AES cakes.
Yes. Hosted by Shell Sweetie. I'll do the entire broadcasting character.
I hate you. You'll die by my hand before you do that.
I know. I couldn't even do a voice now. I can't do sultry. I could do.
You're a little too male for that.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit too male. I have a little bit too much dick. I also a little bit too much of a dick.
Anyway.
Okay. Are we just going to go to questions then? Or are we going to do that other thing first? If you want to do that, or are we saving that?
Oh, yeah. Other thing. Let's do it.
Okay, do you want to go ahead?
Okay. So, I have an announcement for everyone. If you remember last year, I produced a super show. Okay, this is probably the final time I'll ever actually say the name aloud. Faggot Mania. I didn't choose the name. I'm just saying. You know, WWA kind of thing, right? I did a super show last year, and I am planning another one. Exact date, I'm not entirely sure of. I'm thinking somewhere in June or July. And it's going to be pretty great. It's going to be Fire Pro Wrestling Returns. Just like, you know, Faggot Mania was, I'm going to try and really get really good footage. You know, good matches, stuff like that, and the card will be revealed in time. I have several matches planned, and it's still kind of under construction. But one match we can definitely confirm that absolutely will be
a thing.
A thing will be one that I know a lot of people have been waiting for a very long time. Face of the Year versus Heel of the Year. It will be Shaman versus Groudon in a big match. And the name of the event will be Renaissance. So, there we go.
Excellent stuff. Get hype, people. Renaissance coming soon. Thank you, Matt. Yeah. Anything else you'd like to add?
No. I think we can go to questions now.
Okay. Would you like to read off some of the questions then?
Yep. Sure. So, we have quite a few questions here.
Are they all by Joe Vader?
I don't think he actually tuned in this time.
Really? What?
Ah, Joe Vader, why have you done this to us?
He's too busy working his thighs.
We do have a question about Joe Vader from Trapcom. Is Joe Vader... Yeah, from Trapcom. Is Joe Vader ready, brothers? Hashtag VaderMania, hashtag ready.
Trapcom,
I think he
no.
hacked her account.
Joe Vader was Trapcom all along. It's a swerve of the century.
Oh, traps.
Oh, God. I think we may be onto something.
Oh, Christ. But to answer Trapcom's question, no.
Aww. No, he's shit.
Yeah, he doesn't even lift.
Nah, I think Joe Vader's pretty ready. He's probably one of my favorite newer kind of superstars. I really
yeah, he's pretty ready. Have you seen his trunks?
He's ready to shape his thighs.
His thighs are pretty ready. Look at them things.
It's like, you know, when you make a Lego and you get the little different body parts that you put together. They ran out of the Lego parts, so for like Joe Vader's legs, they just kind of got him off on an action figure.
Yeah, he's like those, you know, those 90s action figures with like the ridiculously huge thighs.
Yeah.
Stupid Leafield Vader.
Leafield Vader?
Oh my God.
Joe Vader as designed by Rob Leafield. Google that, by the way, if you don't get the reference. But yes, any of the legitimate questions?
Yeah, we have plenty, actually. Quite a few.
Excellent. I know I got a couple of tweets.
Here's one from Ken D. Blackwell that I think OD could answer. Why so many criticals?
A lot of it is I just keep the critical rate on high just because I like seeing criticals. It's hilarious.
How many people died in that one corner last night?
Not the dead corner.
Three. There was Sterling, Deborah, Oseko, and Christ, four.
Mm. Wow.
Wow. How about that? That's the cursed corner of the golden triad ring.
Someone mentioned that Groudon's underneath the ring and he's holding it up with his fists.
Yeah, and they just land on his fists and get KO'd.
I think it wasn't it named like the Dead Man's Corner?
Yes.
Yeah, the Dead Man's Corner.
That's pretty great. Yeah, I do quite like the criticals. I think the Billy Mays getting killed by Tyler Rykron will never be forgotten.
Yeah, for sure. Just how everyone would pause to just stare at Billy sadly.
And like then, the CNW versus IBW match. That was the first recording. As soon as I saw Sterling Pierce get critical, I was like, okay, I'm going to go with this one.
just imagine him on the mat just being like, fuck you. That was pretty great.
I like how Deus was just like kind of just standing there unsure of what to do as dead Sterling was just like there.
Oh god, my boss is dead. It's too loud in this ring. I wish I could go back home with no shirt, just being a champion.
I wish I could go back to my house and take a big fat revolution shit.
Oh, here's the next one from Derry. Why do you guys suck so much? Sad face. Just kidding. No, then he says, just kidding. My question is, how do you guys feel about stables?
Ooh. I suppose when it really comes down to it, I prefer it when horses are kept in the open air.
Wait.
Okay, I had to make that one. I don't know. When it really comes down to it, I think when they really have a purpose and the storyline's set out and it has a timeline and you know what you... getting into, when they're made with no kind of real purpose, they're just kind of like, hey, all these guys are coming together, let's make a stable, then it doesn't really ever work out well. Because when it comes really down to it, when you're in a stable and you've got, say, three or four guys in a stable, just by extension, by booking one of those guys, you're booking all of them because they're booked by association, really. So if one of them loses, it makes the whole team look bad. If one of them wins, it makes the whole team look good. That's why the Nexus works so well for the beginning, up until, you know.
Yeah, in the beginning.
Yeah, or like the Shield, because the Shield have always been booked together and they've always looked strong. That's why the Shield is probably one of the better examples of a stable being booked well in the past few years in actual wrestling.
I think it helps if, you know, there's planning involved and they have a specific agenda that they can go by. And it's not just, oh, Herfdorf, we're going to beat people up.
Yeah. That's why it works with the Shield, because, you know, they have Justice, I guess. Or, you know, with the Kiwi Shield, they have Justice.
Yeah, Justice. Kiwi Shield's best Shield. Everyone knows this.
I love the graphic of the Kiwi Shield, by the way.
It's adorable. I love the Kiwi Shield. It's just ridiculous.
Matt, I did not believe I heard your thoughts on stables.
Well, for stables, I could say that I'm with you. I like them with a purpose. I think that they're really cool if handled right, if the right people are in them as well.
Class Inc.
Hey, man. Class Inc. is the best stable. Mm. And K+.
Class Inc. and K+.
Yeah, Class Inc. and then also that K+ guy. He's pretty good at getting beaten up.
Yeah, it would just be like, he's size 72 font, Class Inc., size 2 font, also K+.
Well, the thing with Class Inc. is that it has a very defined power structure. Mm. You have Miles, who is, you know, very clearly the leader. Action Jackson, who is on the same level as Miles, but prefers to just kind of, you know, be the I don't want to say the sidekick, but be the right hand man.
Be the swag. You know?
Yeah, he's the swag. He's the purple suit. You know, he's kind of the guy who accompanies Richie to the ring. The guy who, you know,
he's the Wolverine, really.
Yeah, he's. And then you have Richie Stevens, who is just this huge up-and-coming star, and, you know, he has a very clear reason as to why he joined Class Inc. It was, you know, he doesn't like it, but, you know, he's doing it because he thinks it'll, you know, help him in the business. And I think that's just really awesome, because it's just such a cool, nuanced thing, you know, that I don't think a lot of people get. You know, there's a lot of, you know, subtleties in that. And then you have K+, who is, you know, the fall guy. He's a combination fall guy and just the guy you can send out to beat up and get beaten up, you know, no consequence. And then you have Super Plexington, who's just massive monster. And
the powerhouse.
Yeah, the powerhouse. So they have a very, very clearly defined power structure there, and I think that's why they work.
And as well, if I make the comparison to real wrestling again, Four Horsemen.
Mm. Yeah,
you know, where they had the Enforcer, Ric Flair, and they had the, you know, Tully Blanchard and Anna, not Tully Blanchard and who else is in the Four Horsemen?
Mongo.
No, it was Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson, Ric Flair, and
I don't think any of the Four Horsemen smile as much as Richie, though.
Richie's the real smile.
Rich versus Bo. It was Ole Anderson.
Yeah, Ole.
Yeah, and you know they were the tag team, and you know Arn Anderson was also the enforcer. And then again, you know the Four Horsemen kind of switched out. They had Benoit at some point as well. They had Brian. Did they have Brian Pillman?
Yeah, at one point. But yeah,
because then he came. That's why. Brian Pillman does the Four Horsemen sign in W13. Yeah. It took me a while to realize that.
Yep.
But that's why he does the four thing in his entrance. Because he's doing the Four Horsemen sign. There you go. But yeah, squam.
Anyway, yeah. So I think Class Inc. works. Obviously, we have Union versus Administration, I think. That's really cool. I know, you know, the Union side of it started kind of as a peer-supported thing, in a way. It formed itself, right, which I think was, you know, pretty unique, pretty cool way of doing it. But it also
natural.
Kinda, yeah, natural, cool way of doing it. Made sense, you know, the right the characters who should care have mostly joined. Mm. It's a little strange, I think, because there's no kind of power difference there. But
Casey McLeod's the leader
of it. Well, yeah, we have the leader, but other than that, we just kind of have a ragtag group of women who are sick of the administration, which I think works. You know, it's kind of a lot like the front line in TNA versus the Main Event Mafia.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. To do another comparison to real wrestling, herp derp.
Well, it's an easy comparison because it's pretty much something that everyone knows.
Yeah. And I think that, I really like the administration as well because they are just, and it's just a really good way of. So I think in general, I think, as I was saying, stables can definitely work and are working. I just want them to kind of have a point and a goal. So I'm with you guys. And if it makes sense for them to be a stable, then it makes sense for them to be a stable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've already had OD's thoughts on this. And have you got anything else to add?
Yep. Well, we could talk about the Void a bit. The Void's pretty cool.
Yeah, do you want to shed some light on the Void?
I admit that I should probably do what I've been saying too. I should probably try and give them an agenda. I was like, oh, this people beat people up, and then I realized, oh, that's what the Void is doing. Shit.
I think it works for them right now, just because, you know, we have Valgus.
I have an idea. I won't give it away.
Of course.
That's where I'm going to build up to. So
awesome.
Cool.
I can't really get over just, I'm so excited for SAPW's return, man. I can't wait. I know you have some great stuff planned.
Sipwa. Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. So continue with the questions, please, Mr. Matt.
Okay. From Not Tensai, thoughts on eFed wrestling families?
Ooh.
That's interesting.
That is an interesting one. I've said this to Matt. Me and Matt have had this conversation many times, and at first, I think when all the Murdochs were being introduced for one of the examples, as well as obviously the Cortez family, I think when I first looked at it, I was kind of really turned off by the idea of it, because I was like, this is really unrealistic. How many times does this happen in real wrestling? How many times does this happen in fiction? And then when I thought about it, it happens a lot. When you look at real wrestling, there are a lot of families in wrestling. There is, of course, you know, that with Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas, for one example. The Hennigs, the Ortons, they talk a lot
about this.
The Harts, you know, that was the example that we used with the Murdochs.
The Harts and the Murdochs are a really good comparison.
Yes.
Because that is one family that, you know, made a lot of sense. You could really buy, and they're all kind of, you know, they're all very entwined into wrestling.
Yes, and of course, as well, you know, the Dudleys being kayfabe brothers, Edge and Christian being kayfabe brothers, all of the Samoans and everything else. I'd actually probably compare the Murdochs more to the Samoan family.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, God, okay, yeah, the Anoa'is, yes.
The Anoa'is, just because they're all kind of tangentially related. They're like
I think I might be. I think I might be related to the Anoa'is.
It wouldn't surprise
you. You should look into that.
I should.
But, change your name to, I don't know.
Like, once just, I kind of got over that, and I kind of realized, and to like use the example of like real fiction as well, I mean, how many times has it been done in, you know, movies or games or anything like that? You know, I am your brother.
Gasp.
Yeah, gasp. You know, it's that kind of thing. And
brother!
Yeah, exactly. You know, it happens. Just families are always relative in fiction and anything else, because it's something that pretty much, unless we're orphans, and even then, we can relate to, because pretty much everyone has a family of some kind. So it's a good idea, and it's always just kind of something which is that nice backstory. So, for example, like Fats and Miles King.
Yeah, that was fun.
It's something that's just kind of in the back, which it isn't, you know, completely necessary.
It's not the focus of them, but I think, like, with Fats and Miles, I'm really happy that Adam kind of went for that.
Yes.
Because it gives both of us, like, if we're just out of ideas, well, what are we going to do? How about Miles complains about Fats?
Yeah, okay. It's just something additional to work with.
Right.
And I think with the Murdochs as well, I think that can work as well.
Some, if you make it kind of a focus, you need to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, like, it needs to be foreshadowed. It needs to make sense. And obviously some resemblance wouldn't hurt. Mm-hmm. I think coming out of nowhere, like a family thing, would be like, wait, what? This is kind of stupid. But
like, they didn't mention it at all before, and then all of a sudden.
Yeah, and all of a sudden it's a big deal, and you're like, what? What? Okay.
Think about the Rykrons. I think it works, just as it is. It's not something that's a massive focus, but yeah, it just works.
Yeah, the Rykrons are great.
If it was a massive focus...
We're talking like siblings or like huge, giant families like the Murdochs, for example.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's where it really works. But when you start to get into just really complicated family tree stuff and try and make it... I guess if you try and make it too complicated, more than anything, like, you know, if you try and overdo it, then it gets confusing and unrealistic, and I think eventually your brain just kind of shuts down trying to make sense of it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, with the Murdochs is just a really simple idea. They're a bunch of big people from Louisiana who are all related to each other. You know, like, if you can boil it down to a sentence, it makes sense. You know, Fats King is Miles King's fat brother. There.
There you go, yeah. Anything else from me, Review?
No. That's my piece.
OD?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, if it works for the writer and they can make it make sense, then yeah, roll with it. Like, I really like the Murdochs, how they've turned out.
Mm-hmm. Excellent stuff. Odie, coming from an island tribe himself, he knows how these things work.
Yes.
He disappears to hunt.
It also helps, like, if they can connect it together, too. Like,
yeah,
it helps build people.
Mm.
Yeah.
I agree.
Excellent stuff. Alright, next question. We'll do a couple more, maybe.
Okay,
any idea what time we're on?
No.
Yeah.
But I think we're good. Let's see. One from Epic Kira X. How should a change of alignment be handled? What's the right way to turn someone and the wrong way to turn someone?
Right way to turn someone is one.
Think it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, think
yeah,
it
pretty
out.
Pretty much.
Think it out. I was going to say, like, plan it.
Basically, just don't do what WWE is doing right now with the Divas, where it's like, okay, 1 week you're heel, okay, 1 week you're face.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, don't turn someone and don't turn them.
Yeah.
Like give an explanation. Give them motive.
And yeah,
what I like to do is I slow build things. I like to build it up until one giant turn, and then, yeah.
That's how I feel about Ryan Davis, really. Just to me, it's like, I'm just saying that was probably the perfect heel turn, because I think originally it was kind of built up because, you know, I think originally, you know, it started with him just kind of really not liking Christ, and then he was trying to be, you know, nice to everyone else, and then slowly he just got less and less likable until boom, he just crossed that kind of line that
nobody
just
wanted to hang out with him.
he was ringing Richie and he was like, hey Richie, can you hang out? And he's like, nah, I'm kind of busy right now. And then he looks out the car window and Richie's just sat there with Lance. He's like, is that how it is? Is that how we're gonna do this?
He's taking his hat to the movie theater.
Hopefully it wasn't like GTA where it's like, Richie, let's go bowling.
Yeah, hat, let's go to the movies.
So yeah, that is a really good example of a heel turn. Would be that Ryan Davis, and they say, I think we build and fought and just kind of having the plan of beforehand.
Or I don't want to toot my own horn, but like the whole story with Aniki.
Oh yes,
Aniki was great. Like, it helped because, again, you promoed. Like, I'll say that over and over again. That was one thing that helped the Aniki as a character, because people were like, hey, man, you know, we have this kind of this rookie and he's funny and these promos are pretty funny, you know, and then you slowly build kind of to this big turn where it's like, you know, oh, well, he's kind of jealous about Deb and OD going out, and it's like, oh, well, we can kind of, oh, it's kind of sad, kind of funny, poor Aniki, but, you know, it's not really a big deal. And then, boom! Chair a shot, you know, just chair the, just turning on OD like that, and just, you know, like, see, making him big heel, and that's another, just a really, really well handled turn. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, that was just a really good, well thought out turn, and he had a very clear motivation.
On the flip side, I would also like to bring up some of the face turns.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Of course, we've had a lot in a very similar vein where we had, I like to call them the triad of non-Cray. Or kind of, like where Alice Skye was originally at Aestus. Of course, we have August, who was originally...
Austin
Ash, and we have, of course, Oishinigami, who is now still Oishinigami, but Miss Akira. And, you know, they're all built up in their own ways. I mean, Alice Skye was something that was fought about for a while. Oishinigami, again, was something that was has been planned out for about 6 months. If you go back and read my very few last... Yeah. If you go back and read my very few last WFL promos, I was trying to foreshadow it. That's me crying legit tears. And August as well. And they're all really, really good because they're all just kind of, you know... When it comes down to it, turns is just something that should be planned beforehand. You should have an idea. How are you going to turn them? How are you going to foreshadow it? How are you going to build it up? And then just what...
How you're going to act after the turn.
Yes. To me... Yeah, because to me, the legitimate turn, like how you build that up, that determines how over they're going to be to me. Mm. Like, if you do it sloppily, then, you know, people won't give a shit.
Yeah. We see that a lot in WWE. You know? Like, some heel is pretty over, and then he turns face and loses all of his character. And
yeah,
like,
Miz.
Why should I care about this guy? You know? Because it's just sloppily done.
Miz and Del Rio.
Yeah, like,
much.
If we're going to use WWE as an example, I would say a good example of a turn would be Batista with Evolution.
Mm. Yeah.
Just because they built it up, it's somehow.
With Batista.
I think because at the time, like, Batista was this kind of... It was new, so people could root for him.
Mm.
And, like, you know, it's...
One I really liked was I feel there was one in recent memory that I really liked, and Mark Henry in a lot of ways, just because, you know, you had him as this big heel on ECW, and I guess it wasn't really planned or built up, but it was one that sold well because it just when it happened, the moment was right for his face turn. Yeah, his face turn a few years ago.
Oh, when he turned on Chris Jericho, wasn't it?
No, I think it was Orton.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Chris Jericho, because he was in the ring with Jericho, and he was like, Jericho wanted a tag partner. And then he...
Oh, that?
No, it was Orton, I think.
Yeah, it was Orton. It was the gauntlet match. It was the gauntlet match.
Yeah.
Because what it was, I think Orton defeated the first opponent. Can't remember who it was. Second one was Jack Swagger, who, you know, was like, you know, Orton, I respect you too much. So he just kind of got himself counted out.
Yeah.
Yeah, he stood on the apron. And then the third one was Mark Henry, and everyone was like, yeah, man, Mark's just going to do the same thing again. And then Mark just slowly shook his head and slammed Orton, and the whole arena just exploded.
Oh, I remember that, because he, like, wagged his finger and smiled.
Yep.
I remember.
Yeah.
That was a good turn, because it was just... It was both out of nowhere, but it was believably out of nowhere.
Yes.
Because it fit the character of just this big guy who likes to destroy stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then he started dancing with Hornswoggle.
Because that's how a face works, guys.
By the way, Hornswoggle's the anonymous general manager. I just thought I'd remind you all of that.
No.
But yeah. Those are good ones. On a side note, I love August. I'm so happy. Just after seeing Austin Ash just be this awesome heel and probably still one of my favorite characters in AES ever. I don't know what it was, just everything about him clicked.
Yeah.
Just to see him come back as this kind of... In a lot of ways, all he is just a generic face. But since it's so different from everything he's done, it works, and you can really root for him.
I wouldn't use the word generic, but okay, I'd say...
I don't mean generic badly. His character is...
Next week, August comes onto the ring, he's smiling and waving and hugging children.
And dancing with Hornswoggle.
And dancing with Hornswoggle.
Oh, God. What would be the AES equivalent of Hornswoggle?
Japanese RVD.
August as a mystery tag partner. Oh, hello.
Hold on. I just remembered that one Skype call we all had when Japanese RVD like was first used in W13.
Oh, God.
And it just went silent because we were all just laughing so hard we couldn't breathe. Just all the way through, OD was just kind of like, when he was making it, he was just laughing and saying this was the most racist thing that he ever made. And then, yeah, he came down on the bike, and then
yeah, August is just kind of this textbook, you know, nice guy kind of face that works. And you know, that's a good turn. Other questions?
Yes,
yeah, we'll probably wrap it up. So here's the last one. From the Punker, what criteria do you consider when narrowing down to a theme? And that goes for all of us.
Sorry, I could really tell Laura wrote that one just by her wordage.
Criteria is his nursing papers on the brain?
Yes, most likely. Thank you. What criteria?
Well, I try and make a theme that... Or I try and get a theme. One, it needs a hook. Just something right at the start needs just something immediately recognizable. Whether it's just like a pretty hype drum fill or a quote or a sound effect or just a really recognizable first chord, it needs that something that just hooks you immediately. It needs to be fairly high energy or at the very least fitting for the character. You know, I used Manfred Rickett's song as kind of, you know, Evil Man by Abney Park. It wasn't particularly high energy, but it fit the character, and just as soon as the first note hit, you knew what song it was. And for me, like, just the lyrics or the sound, or both preferred, need to fit the character. Mm. Like, that's my biggest thing. It's just people... I'll use an example as someone I say is probably the worst example of an EFED theme in the history of the universe. Was, fuck it, I'll name names. Grand Mystique in WZCW. I've told them this a million times. You have this masked, kind of mysterious, fortune-telling kind of character, right? You know, he uses fortune-telling, he's, you know, big, he's hulking, he has this aura of mystique around him. Obviously, he's the Grand Mystique. He's kind of, you know, and he's actually a really cool character. So, what do you think he uses as his theme?
What's Headstrong's theme?
No, it was Headstrong by Trapped. As in, pretty much, come at me, bro. You're too scared to come at me, bro, the theme.
I remember you told me this before, and I was kind of like, what the fuck? Because I remember someone that I went to secondary school with, I remember that he always used to say that Head Trapped by Strong was their favorite theme.
And it's just,
I was like, what?
It's just such a bad song.
Yeah, like I remember because we'd always talk wrestling and stuff, and it'd be like, "Yeah, I was ever a wrestler. I'd use Headstrong by Trapped as a theme."
Yeah, him and every other EFEDer in 2000.
Yeah, and I looked it up, and I was like,
"Headstrong, take you on." It's just
like, was like the Rams. It was the Rammstein of 2002.
Yeah, pretty much.
Where everyone. Every person, at least like half the people in EFED used.
Yeah, OD, you were around then, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
Wow.
I'm not proud of that.
Was Trevor Kokoa's theme Headstrong?
No.
Oh. Oh, he's going to have that next episode.
Oh, I know what my first theme was. I was about 12. It was, you know, Godzilla, you know that song P. Diddy did? It was that.
I'd never expect you, of all people, to use that theme. Like, what was that for? Was
and,
that for...
And the stock character was Vincent Valentine from Final Fantasy VII. I'm not joking.
I'm imagining him doing JTG's entrance now.
Holy just shit.
Vincent Valentine swagging down the ramp to a P. Diddy song. Actually, a Trent Kokoa.
I think I was super into DX too, so he probably did DX mannerisms. So just imagine Vincent Valentine doing DX mannerisms to P. Diddy's
to theme. A P. Diddy song.
Oh, that is brilliant. Matt, what was That's your first theme?
My first theme. For any character ever?
Sure. Was
okay. Well, I mean, depends on what you mean. Like, for cause, obviously.
Oh, just cause in general.
Well, I mean, for a call, it was, you know, it was the Broken by Fireball Ministry.
I've never heard of it, so.
Oh, it's an SVR-06.
Oh, right.
Like, if it wasn't tied to SVR-06, I'd probably still use it at some point just for something, because it's such a good song. But my first custom theme for any e-wrestling character was Feed My Frankenstein by Alice Cooper for Max Karzai.
Right. Speaking of SVR songs that I would love to use is Can't Stop by Nonpoint, which is in...
You're doing that just to make a theme ad.
Yeah, it's in Day of Reckoning, it's in WrestleMania, and it's in SVR, and I know OD hates it.
Not as much as I hate Firefly from the same soundtrack.
Firefly!
The worst part is they legit use that soundtrack for three different games. They use it for Day of Reckoning, they use it for the original SmackDown vs. Raw, and they use it for WrestleMania 21 on the Xbox.
Oh, God.
And they all have the exact same soundtrack.
Yeah, when you were playing that earlier, I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
The Reckoning soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah, because when I played it Thursday, was it?
Yeah, I think it was Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday, and when we made Pink Guy.
Pink Guy in WrestleMania. We need to continue the campaign at some point.
The greatest face of all.
Eddie. Pink Guy in WrestleMania, was it 21, is basically every single person's first Eve Ed character.
Oh my god. It's just go back and watch the highlight. It's on Twitch. Go back and watch it. There's about 6 hours of footage, but
to the
you should,
YouTube.
You should highlight it, like.
I will.
Okay, excellent. One more question.
One more question. God, we've been going for a gazillion years. Okay, here's one. OD, what is the flavor of your spaghetti?
Chicken Alfredo.
There we go. Actually, here's the real final one. Who is the final boss of AES?
Groudon.
Groudon.
I would say either Groudon. I would love, like, the idea behind Heel Dan is he's supposed to be the last
honestly, I'd say that.
Yeah.
Especially... Like
when he was
just no, I would say Heel Dan to be serious, just because just when he had all three titles and was just or had one, you know, first triple crown in AES, first No Mercy triple crown, and I think that's just a huge deal. Just everything from the theme and just from the concept behind the character just screams final boss to me.
Well, you know, like I said, that was the idea of it. That's how I wrote him. Was that
really?
I kind of imagined him, if you've played the end of Ocarina of Time, when you walk up the stairs, you hear Ganondorf playing the organ, and you know that you're going to get up there, and Ganondorf's going to be there, and you go, and you open the door, and Ganondorf just slowly turns around. Just imagining that with Sir Dan, but just playing a nice little electric piano.
He's playing the harpsichord.
Yeah.
Or you're climbing up the ladder in Metal Gear Solid 3. You finally make it to the top. And then you see Mank Mask.
you're climbing up the ladder and all.
Baby! Woo!
You're climbing up the ladder and all the while you climb up the ladder. Claude Drays is singing.
Yeah! Clink, 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 clink. Really though.
Now I want to hear him sing the Metal Gear Solid 3 theme.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah. Oh god.
I'm still in a dream, sticking up.
I'm still in a dream, sex lord.
I've not done that voice in ages. Wow.
But really, I'd say Heel Dan, just because by virtue of being the first triple crown, I think that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there are others.
Yeah, there's plenty.
Groudon is a pretty solid choice. I'll definitely say that.
Ooh, take a look at what Sean
he's just
said.
The first person that springs to mind with me, just because he's how dominant he is in both feds.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Zangief versus Groudon would have been an awesome map.
Yeah. TZ, if you are truly willing to play for a full Claude Drea Snake Eater, it will be on iTunes momentarily as well as this podcast.
we're not. Oh, okay, we're doing it.
No. No, seriously. Okay, anything else, or are we going to close this up?
I think that is everyone for this time. Well, you know, we got a lot of good questions answered.
We got a lot of good questions answered. I feel like...
And I am sorry for my spaghetti earlier.
It's okay.
We wanted to get your full personality, and if we were going to get Osaka and Destroyer on here, we had to get the full dish.
Yeah.
The spaghetti was the starter. We're at their ice cream right now, so...
It was the appetizer.
Yeah. And, then, you know, it'll be great to have you on again at some point.
It will. So, I really don't want to end this. This has been really fun.
Yeah, but this has gone for how many hours now?
About 7, at least.
Yeah, about 7 hours. And, you know, as we know from personal experience, we could probably talk about eFeds for about 9-10 hours at a time.
Oh, but... no, what we should mention, actually, before we finish... Last time we were on here, we had me, Matt, Gurley, and TBK. After the podcast finished, Gurley went. TBK also decided to go and get pissed drunk.
Oh, yeah. TBK got completely drunk after the podcast, so I guess that just tells you about the quality of it.
Oh, my... It was fucking hilarious, though. Like, I don't drink, but I will willingly
I missed the live thing. So I watched it on YouTube.
Yeah,
I think at the end, someone was talking and just cut off. That was hilarious. I think it was TBK or Gurley.
We did it on purpose. Cut the bloody... cut off the bloody feed.
Took him off the bloody air! But yeah, oh my god, TBK got pissed drunk. It was fucking hilarious. Like, I don't drink, but I will willingly get other people drunk. Especially TBK is great. He just gets really incomprehensible and... Yeah, it's pretty great. Anyway, I think we're good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think.
And he told me.
So this was a very good show.
Very good show.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Or downloading if you're listening to this on iTunes.
I'll download if you're listening to this on iTunes.
Yes. Roll it out.
Yes, that's pretty much it. Oh, God.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. That.
Yes.
So, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. This has been Sir Dan Dinerson alongside Matt the Doctor.
Hi.
And a second destroyer.
Yes.
Good night.
Good night. Yes.